Erev Tov, Rabotai. So I'm sorry for the delayed Hashkafavad. So as we like to start these Hashkafavad monologues dedicated to Josh Aziz, F.O. Or Shtabach Shemo, that's great. Anyway, Josh, we love you. Anyway, Rosh Hashanah is less than 2 weeks away, and it is the number one most fateful day of the year, literally, because it's the day of the year that a person's fate is decided. There is something about Rosh Hashanah that does not apply to any of the other Chagim, Yamim Tovim of the year. Every other Yom Tov, every other Regel, Moed, is always just pure joy. As the Torah says at the end of Parashat Re'eh, V'samachta b'chageicha, ta'omidcha v'itecha, v'abdecha v'amatecha, even though the Torah says that in the context of Chag HaSukkot, the Gemara learns out that this really encompasses all of the Mu'adim, all of the Reganim. They are all supposed to be celebrated b'simcha. Rosh Hashanah is interesting. Rosh Hashanah is not a regil, it's not a festival, it's a holiday, it's a Yom Tov. Yom Tov, but there is this very intriguing combination of Simchat Yom Tov, joy, happiness, you know, calm, serenity, and at the same time this gripping terror of the deed. Because anything, there's no such thing as bad when it comes from Shamayim, but anything what we call bad that ever happened to anybody was always decreed on Rosh Hashanah. And nobody has any idea how the din is going to turn out. So there's this mix of tremendous joy and tremendous terror. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, feel both simultaneously and don't let either of them cancel each other out. It's like a very interesting balance. To the extent, the Ben Ish Chai, Parashat Nitzavim, Shana Rishona, he writes that Rosh Hashanah is a time of simanim. Yes? That's why we customarily eat certain things on Rosh Hashanah. Simanim, yes? And different communities in Am Yisrael, they eat different things, which is all fine. They all revolve around the same simanim that Gemara talks about. And we abstain from eating certain things, overly bitter, overly spicy, overly sour. Why? Because Rosh Hashanah is a very, very symbolic day. And we don't want to, the first half of the day on Rosh Hashanah, at least until Chatzot, we don't sleep because a person doesn't want to have a sleepy mazal. Everything about Rosh Hashanah is very action-oriented, food, speech, and the reason for that is because Rosh Hashanah is a fateful day, and the symbolism that we infuse into Rosh Hashanah will have some sort of an impact on the year to come. Now, the Ben Ish Chai adds, he says, you know what's the biggest siman of all on Rosh Hashanah? Hands down, biggest siman. Huh? The biggest impact of behavior on Rosh Hashanah that will impact the rest of your year. Anger. Anger. Ka'as. The Ben Ish Chai says a person has to be extremely, extremely careful on Rosh Hashanah not to be ko'es about anything. Even things that a person would usually get upset about, even things that a person would be justified in being upset about. You know, sometimes the Gemara says throughout the year, parents at a Rebbeim, they're able to get upset about certain things in order to instill fear in the children, whatever it is. Rosh Hashanah, nothing. Only calm and serenity and joy for the full 48 hours of Rosh Hashanah. Zero kaas. Why? He says there's no greater bad siman, bad omen on Rosh Hashanah for the rest of the year than midat ha-ka'as.
Why dafka anger? Why not jealousy? Sadness?
Ka'as is avodah zarah. Ka'as is intimately related to ga'ava, which are the two forefathers of all of the other bad midot. Ga'ava v'ka'as. So a person has to be very careful of that. Meaning that it's hard to explain, but the joy of Rosh Hashanah, as the tour in the beginning of Siman Tavkuf Be'alef states, Can I ask you a question? On a court, on a day that you have a serious court case and you don't know what the verdict is, how are you happy? So how are we joyful? Why are we wearing nice clothes? Why are we eating good foods? Why aren't we fasting? There's machloket poskim, by the way, whether or not you're allowed to fast on Rosh Hashanah. Some people do. Midat maran, midat arbit poskim, we don't fast. Asur, yom tov, can't fast. So if that's the case, why aren't we fasting? If it's such a fateful day, why didn't Hashem make it like Yom Kippur that we're fasting on Rosh Hashanah as well? Answer, Mipne, says the Tur, Mipne shebetuchim anu she'aselon ha-kadosh baruch hu nes, v'yotzi la'or mishpatenu. We are, there's no guarantees, but we are confident that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to judge us favorably. And after being chozer b'tshuva and coming clean before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we're confident that HaKadosh Baruch Hu will decree another year of life and goodness for us. Guarantees? None. And yet, the emunah and bitachon, the faith system of Am Yisrael dictates that that's how we perceive these days of Rosh Hashanah. So that's just... Meaning what? Okay. Okay. Doctors say a lot of things, and sometimes doctors say that a person's going to die in 3 months and he ends up living another 3 years. Yeah. Yeshaya Navi told Chizkiyahu, you are going to die. Da, ki met ata velo techeh. He says because you didn't get married. Nahon? Told him you're going to die. Chizkiyahu HaMelech was chozer b'tshuva. He got married, and what happened? He lived another 15 years. There's no rhyme or reason with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Meaning, science, doctors, yes, there's derech hateva, but there's also a lot of shelo kederech hateva. Am Yisrael is lema'ala me'ateva. We have tefillah, we have tachanunim, all these things impact. So that's what I had to say for today. I'll open the floor. Wait, talk to the thing.
How could you have hope on something that's lema'ala me'ateva if you can't rely on the lema'ala me'ateva?
You can't rely on nisim when you have to be doing regular bitachon. You have to live like a normal person. But you're allowed to have hope and bitachon and HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He can change the teva for you. You can't act on that in a normal, meaning if a person's sick, he has to go to the doctor. You can't say, oh, I'm batuach. You can't walk blindfolded into oncoming traffic and batuach that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to do nis. But if a person's already in that matzav, a person should and must absolutely have full bitachon and HaKadosh Baruch Hu that He can save him from the situation in a moment. We learn that from Chizkiyahu also. When Yeshaya Navi told Chizkiyahu that he's going to die, what did Chizkiyahu reply to him? Ben Amot, that was his name. Yeshaya ben Amot, Kale nevuatecha v'tze. He says, finish your nevuah and get out. Why? He says, kach kibalti mibet avi abba. He says, I have this tradition from my father and grandfather's house from Malchut Bet David. Afilu cherev chadam unachat al tzavaro shel adam lo yitya'esh atzmo min arechamim. He says, never give up hope, even if you have a sharp sword on your neck, it's already penetrating. You're about to get your head chopped off. Al yitya'esh atzmo min arechamim. Yeah. Anybody? Which one? Aha, you didn't sleep last night, did you? Okay. Good, that's a good sign. If you look, there's a Mishnah, Masechet Sukkah, Daf Tet Amud Aleph. It's Alachan Shulchan Aruch, Siman Tafresh Lamed Vav, Saif Aleph. The halacha is that there's something called Sukkah Yeshana. A Sukkah that was built, an old Sukkah that was built throughout the year, not for the purpose of Sukkot. In order for that Sukkah to be kasher, says that it's kasher ubilvat sheyechadesh badavar. You have to do what? Renew it. Renew something. The exception to that rule is building a Sukkah within 30 days of the Chag. The halacha is, when's 30 days of the Chag? Tetvav Elul, which was 2 days ago. Velachin, if you build the Sukkah, then even without special kavanah l'shem Chag, what's the halacha? Afilu min astam? Kasher. 30 days before the Chag. Okay, anybody want to jump in here with the question? Don't think too much.
All right. So unfortunately, some people think that in order to be financially successful, you need to go to public school and associate with the secular culture. But what about people like us who are involved with the yeshiva who are learning? And Bezrat Hashem, we're going to do very well with our parnasa. Are we allowed to brag it to them that we made it somewhere and like they're not necessarily on that same level when we're higher than them?
So that's a good question. I don't think you have to brag to them, but I think you can say, look at the product of yeshiva education. You know how many people come out of public school, and even not only public school, even we'll call it Jewish schools that aren't up to par halachically. We'll leave it at that. They emerge after, I don't know, 13, 14 years of schooling, absolute doorknobs. You know what I'm talking about? Ben b'limudei kodesh, ben b'limudei chol. Sometimes I see people, I don't get it. People send their kids sometimes to these yeshivas that are three times the tuition of like regular yeshivot kedushot. And whatever, they're supposed to be high caliber or whatever. And they come out, they can't read a sidur, they can't read a gemara, they can't... Okay, fine, you want to say limudei kodesh, they didn't put such an emphasis. Okay. Limudei chol. Math, sciences, writing, English, whatever, also subpar. So what's going on? Where's the reputation? I'm not saying it's everybody, but this is, you know, these schools are supposed to be the best thing to hit the world since Wonder Bread. You know what I'm saying? Or are these schools? God's gift to mankind, Baruch Hashem. But where's everything going? 30, 40, and sometimes above $1,000 a year in tuition. For what? What are they producing?
Yeah.
Yeshivot kedoshot are a third of the price. And you can even get breaks there. More breaks than the other ones are giving you. And they emerge, you know. I'm not saying everybody emerges gdol ador, but you have basic knowledge of Torah, Gemara. Yes, some people struggle more, struggle less. That's always going to be like that. But show, look. And then for the ones that want to continue into professional lifestyle, whatever, they go into, you know, a yeshiva college, they come here, they learn, they get a degree, they're successful. I wouldn't say brag, but I would say the proof is in the pudding. You have what I'm saying?
When it comes to Hoshana Rabbah, a lot of people, when they stay up and learn all night...
How'd you get to Hoshana Rabbah then? Okay, yeah.
They could get very tired and they could doze off during davening, sleeping outside the Sekha Shina Tarai. Uh-huh. Does Rebbe think we should, like, people shouldn't stay up so people are able, so they won't doze off and do an Isur of Shina Tarai outside of the Sekha?
So you're asking me to abolish Hoshana Rabbah, basically. I don't think that that's necessarily the solution. Everybody has to know their own capacities. If you're feeling tired and it's going to affect your davening tomorrow and your learning tomorrow and whatever it is, so take a nap before or take a nap during and then get up and learn for the rest of whatever you can. Yes. No, Shavuot is different because there's no sukkah. Shavuot is much shorter also. Take a nap before. Take a nap. So try, we can't abolish these minhagei Yisrael. You know what I'm saying? You do what you can. So Ashkenazim in general, they have like a later minyan on Shavuot. You know what I'm saying? They stay up a little bit. Not all of them, but some of them. Not all Ashkenazim daven nitz on Shavuot and Hoshana Rabbah. Some of them, they stay up a little bit, go to sleep, and then they come back to daven at 9. But by and large, by Sfaradim, that's not the minhag. By and large, Sfaradim stay up daven nitz. Sof ma'aseh b'machshava tchila. Take a nap before. You know what I'm saying? Don't. But I can't, you know, I can't abolish standing minhagim. You want to just blow it out of the water? I can't do that. Yeah.
With yeshivas, they generally learn. With yeshivas, they generally learn Gemara b'Iyun, and being that there's such a large Torah to learn and so little time, like, how does one approach the Torah as a whole, whether it's Gemara or Halacha or all of Tanakh and all these things in general? How to approach a way to try and cover all grounds throughout a not so long lifetime.
So I want to tell you a little bit of a life hack about your single years in yeshiva. contrary to what you've been told, your single years in yeshiva are not primarily meant to amass a lot of yediot Torah. What are we doing here? What are you talking about? Let me explain. Primarily, your single years in yeshiva, elementary less, high school more, base medrash most, are meant to sharpen your learning skills, to give you those tools, so that after you get married, most people are not in yeshiva long term, statistically. Yes? Yeshiva, kollel, whatever. So by the time you leave yeshiva, you need to be, just like you're being lehavdil, you're being given the tools, not to compare at all, for your trades, for your vocations, for your careers, you're being given your Torah tools as well. Your toolbox is comprised of Gemara tools, Gemara, Rashi, Tosfot, Rishonim, Halakha tools a little bit, Chumash and Mefarshim, and anything, any other extracurricular limudim, not necessarily so that when you emerge from yeshiva, when you get married, now I'm ready to take a test on my vast yediot Torah. That would be great. But it's primarily meant to sharpen your skills so that now after you get married, whether you stay in kollel or you don't, or whatever it is, now you'll be able to do it better on your own for life. And that, when you have the tools and you do it yourself, this is when you begin to amass large swaths of yediot Torah. You understand what I'm saying? That's the idea. Yeah.
So when one is older, how, when and in the married life, especially when one's older and married, and like even if one's working, then how like what type of limudim, or how does one divide their day in terms of limud in that life, part of life?
In general, a married person's seder, whether you're in kollel or not, you have to have some focus on Gemara, Shas. You have to have a focus on Halakha. However you want to learn it, deeper, more, you know, more shallow, however it is, not shallow, but more superficial, let's say, Musar. That you need every day. When it comes time for Shabbatot and Chagim and stuff like that, you need also to be proficient in Parashat HaShavua, Torah Shebichtav, Mefarshim, whatever. So you split your days in that way. Because Gemara is the most important tool in your toolbox. Gemara skills is the tool that teaches you how to learn Gemara. It's also the tool that teaches you how to learn Halakha. It sharpens your mind not only with the language, it also sharpens your mind how to learn Tanakh. It also sharpens your mind about how to incorporate Musar. All of that is, it's a holistic yeshiva experience that is meant to give you, by the time you walk out of here, you have a full Torah learning toolbox that you're able to apply in your life going forward.
Maybe this is just the impression I'm getting from the yeshiva system, that the guys, it's not really their intention, just learn just to pick up like a vast knowledge, like, oh, I know this and that.
Besides for select few exceptions, the vast majority of Bachurim walking out of Beis Medrash, let's say into marriage, even into kollel, whatever, do not possess large chunks of Yediata Torah in many different areas. Yes? What they're expected to possess are the tools. That if I give you a Daf Gemara anywhere in Shas, you'll be able to make a landing on it. If I give you a Daf in Shulchan Aruch Mishnah Berura, you can learn it up. If I give you a Chumash with Or HaChaim HaKadosh or with Ramban, you'll be able to learn it. That's the idea. You understand? That they should. Sure.
Good. Isn't the heavy focus on Ian rather than like splitting it more Ian Bakiyas kind of counterintuitive in that way?
Because the sharpening of your Ian skills rubs off on your Bakiyas skills. That's what I was saying before. Sharp Ian skills makes you better in Ian, makes you better in Bikiyas, makes you better in Halacha, because now you're thinking more analytically. Your vocabulary and the reading process is becoming easier, so you're more equipped to tackle any of the mikzaot in the Torah. Anyone else?
Is it an issue that we daven Arvit and we're facing a mirror, basically?
Why Arvit? Why not Shacharit or Shacharit or Mincha?
I don't think it's as effective.
Oh, time out. You're asking about the mirror?
Yeah.
Okay. I thought you were asking something else. I'm sorry. Yeah. So only the poskim bring down, only an actual mirror is asur to daven in front of. Even though it's, if you have regular glass, to a certain extent, any kind of glass will be reflective sometimes. Yes? Glass is mutav. Only something that was actually made as a mirror is asur. V'lachin mutar litpalim. In this direction. I thought you were asking about davening in the general davening direction. This is north.
Oh, really?
Yes. I don't know if you ever noticed that. So, I did research on this. The Reshiva also didn't have an explanation. He wasn't here when the Yeshiva was built. For some reason, architecturally, they found it more appropriate, whatever, to put Daron Kodesh in the north. There's a machloket poskim whether or not, whatever. Long story, I give a shiur about this. Maybe I'll give another shiur about this. Just the Tovat Ainyan. Lalach, that's east. That's north. Therefore, in order to be Yotze Kol HaDeot, the best thing that, anybody ever see me daven? See my shtender? It's angular. It's on an angle, so that Rova Tzibur is facing the north, so you have to do like Rova Tzibur also. Shift a little bit, and try to have at least your face towards the east. Yetzadid panav klape mizrach. So when you're already on a little bit of a tilt, it's easier to tilt your head to the east. But not too much, because you don't want to be porosh min tzibur. No afganot. You have what I'm saying? So that's the proper way to pray here. Upstairs, we don't have that problem. Upstairs, we're facing east.
In this school, and also, and this is Shiva, but this is regarding to the school system here, and in other schools and the colleges, there's clubbing, there's clubs.
We don't have clubs.
Oh, there's no more clubs. So, really? Okay. But in general, if one were to join a club, is that considered too much hishtadlu and bitul Torah, or it's proper to actually join that club?
So for institutions where clubs exist and the clubs are kosher, Bakol Beseder, whatever it is, you know, music, or I don't know if you saw signs, you know, you ever saw the Hands-On Halacha Club? That's me. Yeah, we do fun stuff, shofarot, kill animals and check their lungs, you know, stuff like that. We stopped having clubs here because of things that happened last year and other institutions and caused legal issues and whatever. So the yeshiva shut down any, I got you. One second. The yeshiva shut down any recreational clubs, and only academic clubs are still allowed. That's it. Everything else is still, you can have a gathering, whatever, but to have an official club, if it's only recreational in nature, the yeshiva no longer allows it. Only academic. If you feel that you would, for like a career, it's good on the resume, whatever. If it's not taking up too much of your time, these clubs usually meet, we're not going to call it a club, whatever.
Take an hour of free pizza.
Yeah, usually a club in this building means that there's free lunch and you just kind of chill a little bit. You know what I'm saying? So there's never a bad reason to have a free lunch. You know what I'm saying? What? Yeah, smash, pizza, whatever, any, lamshane. Aval, you know, don't spend too much time on it. Lefich, maybe it can boost you. Sometimes people need that outlet, music, chess, you know, whatever, frees up your brain a little bit. Anybody else?
Yeah. It's definitely like a...
You didn't hear it from me that there's no more fun, but there's no more fun.
On a general level, how does one know if he's in the right yeshiva for him, or if there's a certain shelf life where it's ever time to move on, or is it just like stay in the same yeshiva forever? Like, what's the get there?
I don't think there's one one size fits all answer for that question. It all depends on the circumstances. If you feel your learning is great, you're fired up, motivated, dedicated, then keep at it. If it ain't broken, don't fix it. But if you feel, you know, sometimes in life people get burnt out, people outgrow the system. Sometimes there are people who get older in the yeshiva and they feel out of place. Whatever your matzav is, you ask a she'elat chacham, and you see, maybe it's, sometimes it is time to move on. Maybe it's not. Maybe I'm making a wrong decision. You have to be mitiayetz. Oh, okay. Huh? Oh, we're about to start Marav? Okay. Moral of the story tonight is, there's never a bad reason for free lunch. Laila tov.